From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. There are positive signs in the Cape Fear region that initiatives to combat the opioid epidemic are making headway. The Cape Fear Opioid Overdose Quick Response Team, a pilot program funded for 2 years by the North Carolina General Assembly, is reporting good results. Just last week, they told WHQR's Vince Winkle they're getting about 10 people a month into treatment. Officials say doctors are prescribing fewer opioids, too. But there's a legacy issue. Those already addicted often move to heroin when they can no longer get prescriptions for opioids. According to a recent report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, overdose deaths among women are on the rise. In New Hanover County, one local doctor, William Johnstone, a faculty member of the Obstetrics and Gynecology Residency Program at New Hanover Regional Medical Center, recognized the problem among his patients early. He launched a program last year funded by the county that offers medically assisted therapy to women who are either new mothers, pregnant, or who might become pregnant. Tides opened late last year, and one of its first patients, Krista Turner, is joining me now to talk about her journey and her recovery so far. Krista Turner, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
This is a pre-recorded conversation. And Krista, you are the mother of two children now.
Right.
And it wasn't until, though, you learned you were pregnant with your second child, a girl, that you also learned you had to get some help if you were going to survive.
Yes.
So tell us about that time in the hospital when the doctor told you that you were pregnant.
Well, first off, I was in the hospital for my fourth diagnosis of endocarditis, which is a heart infection from IV drug use. And when I got my initial blood work done, all the initial tests, the doctors came back in and told me that I was 14 weeks pregnant. And I was, then they performed an ultrasound later that day and told me I was having a girl. So it was quite the shock. I didn't know. I didn't have any clue that I was pregnant.
At that point, what was the state of your drug use? How much were you using? What were you using?
I used heroin and crack cocaine every day, all day. As long as I had the money to support my habit, I was using all day.
And so at that point, you were sick in the hospital with endocarditis, this heart infection. You just learned that you were 14 weeks pregnant. Is there any thought about getting an abortion at this point? Or when they told you it was a girl?
I think at this point, knowing how sick I was and them telling me that it was a girl and I was already so far along, something clicked in my mind, like this child is already developed and I need to get everything together. Like, this is a turning point in my life. I'm at a crossroads right now. So I need to get my health together because I have another life to think about. And this is my second chance at being a mother. So I was willing to do whatever it took at that point.
And did the doctors also tell you that you might not make it? I mean, was your life kind of hanging in the balance at that point?
Definitely. I had, like I said, this was my fourth diagnosis of endocarditis within a 3-year span. And I didn't, I would, it requires 6 to 8 weeks of IV antibiotics at the hospital. And because my drug addiction was so severe, I would only go for like a week or so just to feel a little bit better, and then I would leave the hospital so I could get high again. And this was ongoing, a continuous cycle for 3 years. And have done significant damage to my heart. I have to have my tricuspid valve replaced now. And with being pregnant also, it was taking a toll on my body in general. So if I wouldn't have accepted the medical treatment at that time, then it would have been fatal for sure.
So let's go back then to how this all started for you, because there's the physical fact of the addiction that you're dealing with at that point in your life.
Right.
But your childhood in some ways kind of set you up for this. So you grew up surrounded by people abusing substances, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you live with your mom and dad?
I lived with my mother for most of my childhood. The beginning years, like infant to toddler, I was kind of in between family members. My mom was really young, and her and my dad had substance abuse issues. And
what kinds of things were they using at that point?
Well, my mom, I'm not sure then, but she has a problem with alcohol. My dad is a crack addict. I think then when they were younger, it was mostly cocaine. And they were young, and they didn't really, weren't very responsible. So,
yeah. And just to be clear, we're not blaming them
right,
at this
exactly.
point. We're just painting the picture
exactly.
about what you were born into and then how this affected you as
right.
a small child.
Right.
So there was crack, cocaine, alcohol.
Right. So I lived with my dad's mother during those times. And then my mom got me back when I was around 2 years old, and I've lived with my mom ever since. And she had a string of horrible marriages. They were physically abusive. They were drug users also. My mom didn't use drugs. Once she got me back, she just had a severe problem with alcohol. And in the physical abuse in the relationships, that was a daily part of our lives, and it wasn't hidden from me. I saw it, and I felt a lot of the times that I had to protect my mom, so I kind of felt like her mom in my younger years. So.
And how did that manifest when you say physical abuse? Was it these men beating her up in front of you, or what does that mean?
Yes, they were physically abusive to her, and one of her ex-husbands was also physically abusive to me. That was her husband right after my dad, so I was very young, and 3 or 4 years old, and I do remember, those are my earliest memories of him beating her. I remember specific situations that, you know, that we were in, being locked in a bedroom for a day at a time after he beat her up. And yeah, those are my earliest memories as a child.
Your father, was he abusive?
No, my dad was not physically abusive, nor mentally abusive. He was just a drug addict.
You told our producer, about
right.
something.
Yeah. So he wasn't abusive towards my mother. That's the question that I was answering.
I understand. I understand that. Okay. So your mom, so what you're seeing is a very small child, a toddler,
right.
into growing into a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing this kind of parade of men. How many husbands did she have?
She's been married 5 times.
Okay. So all these different men coming in, being physically abusive to her, hurting her, you're feeling protective. At least one of those people was physically abusive to you.
Right.
Locking you in a bedroom for a day. Were you also hit? Were you?
I don't specifically remember being hit, but I know that it happened because of family's testimony to that. So, yeah, that
And then your father is a whole different story because he was abusive to you.
Yes.
How did he abuse you?
He was sexually abusive to me. I was so young and I was a daddy's girl. He could do no wrong in my eyes. I remember him coming to my house when I was younger when he would relapse or get into some trouble. He would come over and apologize and cry, and I'd cry right along with him and say, "It's okay, I don't care." You know, he couldn't do nothing wrong in my eyes. Well,
he's crying, and so you're feeling bad for him.
Right, right.
And you were, what, 7 or 8 years old?
Right.
At this point?
Mm-hmm.
So you're a little girl.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think the first incident happened when I was around 7 or 8 years old. I used to stay weekends with him and his wife, and who was not a drug user. She was probably the best thing that ever happened to him, but they're no longer together. But so that's why my mom trusted for me to go over there, because of her. And we, you know, she was under the assumption that he wasn't using at the time. So I would stay with him on the weekends, every other weekend or so. Well, the first incident happened, and
you know what? We're going to pick this up
okay.
when we come back from the break. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with one of the first people to go through the newly launched Tides, Inc. rehabilitation program. Krista Turner has battled a heroin addiction and is now not only clean, she's working towards becoming a certified substance abuse counselor herself. And when we come back from this break, our conversation continues with the story of her childhood. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today we're talking with Krista Turner. She's been clean and sober since joining Tides, Inc. last year, and she's telling her story as part of her commitment to helping other people get clean and also destigmatize the notion of addiction. Today's conversation is pre-recorded, and Krista, just before we went to break, you were bravely telling us about your childhood and how you were basically surrounded by adults who were not only addicted to alcohol and drugs themselves, but were also physically abusive. Your father is one of those people who was physically abusive to you. You said that he sexually abused you beginning around the age of 7 or 8 years old.
Correct.
Can you tell us about that first incident?
So like I said, I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I had stayed with him one weekend. My stepmom had gone to the store. My dad asked me, he asked me to give him a back rub. So that's how it was initiated. And
had he ever asked you that before?
No. Not that I can remember, but I do remember him asking me that day. So that's how it was initiated, and then it just led to him asking me to do inappropriate things. So I don't.
At that point, so that was over one of the weekends that you were staying with him. And because you had a stepmom there who, as far as everybody understood, was not a substance abuser.
Right.
Your mom thought that that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened when you went back home to your mom at that point?
I kept this to myself for quite a while. It was our little secret, kind of. And I think that I was looking for love and approval from my dad. And this was I was a child, so I have to always remind myself that.
Do you blame yourself a little bit for that?
I feel like because I let it go on for so long, there is a certain amount of blame I set upon myself, but I know that's incorrect to place the blame on myself. I was a child.
Yeah.
So I have to constantly remind myself of that. But I did let it go on for so long because I was looking for that love and approval from my dad, and that it was our time together. So.
And just to be clear, I am not a medical professional, but I do want to say, if you were 15 years old and had come naked to your father and danced around the room and threw yourself at him, you're still a child. It's still incumbent on the adult.
Exactly.
To take care of you.
You're correct about that.
So of course, as a little girl, you're getting attention from your dad. You have this secret with your dad. At what point did you go to your mom? Because there was a time you went to your mom and told her about it.
Yes.
Why did you decide to tell her about it?
Well, because of the lifestyle my mom lived and the circumstances that surrounded our home life, I was kind of granted a lot of leniency. I was an only child with my mother and my father, so I was spoiled. And I learned to manipulate at a young age to get what I wanted. And I think I don't remember the exact why I was getting in trouble, but I don't remember what I did, but I knew that I was about to get a punishment, and I kind of decided to bring this up to my mom now so we could avoid getting in trouble. And so that's the first time that I let her know what had been going on. And I didn't even tell her that it had been going on for so long. I just told her of one incident that had happened. And it wasn't until years later that she found out that, you know, it was an ongoing situation.
So how old were you when you told her about one incident?
Probably 10.
Mm-hmm. So it had been going on 2 or 3 years at that point.
Right.
You told her one incident happened, and how did she react?
She was furious. She, of course, called. Like I said, I was young, so I don't remember all the details, but I know that she called my dad. She called his mother. He obviously came up with an excuse of why it happened. He said he was on sleeping pills. That's what it was. So he didn't know what he was doing. He was asleep. He wasn't in his right mind. I remember talking, my mom, tried to press charges. I remember talking to a sheriff, and then I didn't hear anything else about it. I think my dad's side of the family kind of talked my mom out of pressing charges because nothing ever came out of it. So, yeah, that's where that went.
And so the sexual abuse by your father continued?
Yes.
And how long did it go on?
It went on for a few years, and then my dad had asked me to do something specific that I was not willing to do. I was a little bit older. I knew what he was asking me to do, and I was not comfortable with it at all. And I remember after he asked me to do it, I remember going into the bathroom, locking myself in the bathroom, and talking to myself in the mirror. And I was having this conversation with myself, going, oh my gosh, like, I cannot believe this just happened. I don't know what to do. And that is when I decided that this was not going to happen anymore, that it was not right. It had definitely, I mean, it had gone too far from the first time, but it was only progressing, and I didn't know where, I mean, it had to stop.
And how old were you now?
Probably, I think I was still 10 or 11 years old.
The adult responsibility that you've had to take on from the time you were a small child is kind of staggering,
right,
to hear as you tell this story. We're talking with Krista Turner, who has battled drug addiction for most of her life. She's one of the first patients to go through Tides, Inc., the newly launched rehabilitation program that uses medically assisted therapy and is funded by New Hanover County. Krista has been clean since sometime last year, and she's working to become a certified substance abuse counselor. Our conversation today is pre-recorded. Around 12 years old, was that the first time that you used drugs yourself?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I was dating an older boy. He was 16 years old, and he was into hallucinogens, ecstasy, acid, mushrooms, and alcohol. So the first time I used drugs was, you know, a cliche. I wanted to fit in. And I wanted to keep my boyfriend. I didn't want him to break up with me, you know.
To seem like the fun girlfriend.
Exactly. So, and this goes along with the leniency that I had as a child. My mom would, you know, let me go stay the night with him overnight on school nights, and I was 12 years old.
And so you're sleeping with, you're having sex with him at 12?
Yes. Yep. And so this... That went on for some time, about a year. I think I was in that relationship, and I consumed a lot of brain-injuring substances that year. And so I feel like...
Hallucinogenics.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people think that when you start using drugs, that is the time that you stop mentally aging. And I definitely think that is a true statement, because from the time I was 12 years old, I've used hard drugs, you know, on and off throughout my life, and it has definitely taken a toll on my mental maturity. So,
do you find yourself, you feel like you revert back to that 12-year-old? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Like that's sort of your mm-hmm. emotional set point.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I'm growing now that I'm sober. It's I'm getting acclimated to being an adult and taking on these responsibilities. But there's still a part of me that feels like I didn't get to be a child. So, but then I kind of turn that around and have fun with my kids that way. So I get to kind of be a kid there, and then, you know, have to take care of my adult responsibilities also. But that's
right.
The great part about having children now. So
right. So you started at 12 with hallucinogenics, and when did you move into other kinds of substances?
Well, throughout my school years, I always hung out with the bad crowd, the kids that use drugs. I was never a marijuana smoker. That was never my thing. I just didn't like the high. But
you smoked crack.
Yes. I was 13, I think, the first time that I smoked crack. I was at a party of a friend, and his uncle was in the downstairs bathroom smoking crack, and I was with a girlfriend of mine, and he offered it to us, and we tried it. And I don't remember feeling the effects of it in that particular situation, but because I knew that my dad, you know, was a crack addict, and I wanted to see what it was about, why, you know, he had stayed addicted for so long. So that furthered my curiosity later on. And it was only a couple years later that I actually started, 15, 16 years old, I was smoking crack on a regular basis. on school nights, I was stinking out of my house to smoke crack with older men.
At what point did you turn to heroin?
It was after my son was born. I was 20 years old when my son was born, and he was about 10 months old the first time I used heroin. I had started smoking crack again. I had stayed clean for most of that pregnancy and then the first 10 months of his life.
How did you do that?
I think I was excited to be a mom. It was my first child, and me and my husband at that time, we had our own place, and I was the stay-at-home mom, and I thought that's what I was put on this earth to do. And then drugs got reintroduced into my life, and my addictive personality, my addiction, my disease, if you will, crept back up, and I couldn't fight it because I didn't have the tools at that time to do so.
Right. But it's amazing that the sense of mission you got from being married and being pregnant and feeling like you were put on the earth to be a mother to this child,
right,
that was enough to keep you clean during your pregnancy.
Right.
Wow. So drugs came back into your lives. Was your husband using as well?
Yes. We were both. We had moved to Leland, and closer to my mother. And the road that we moved on, unbeknownst to us at the time, was full of drugs. And it was during the first tax return we got with claiming a child. So it was a significant increase in money. And that was a trigger for us. You know, we paid up all our bills and we had a lot of money left over in our first. We're both addicts, and our first thought is to get some drugs.
Were you going at that point to any kind of NA or a 12-step group? Did you have any help other than your personal sense of mission?
No, I wasn't in any type of program at all. I didn't have any tools to help. I didn't have a relapse prevention plan in place. I thought that I was secure in my sobriety at the time, and I was obviously wrong.
So you got back into drugs, and that was about 11 years ago now? Almost 10, 11?
10 years, yeah. 10 okay. years.
And you started getting arrested at some point.
Right. Well, we started with the crack in, went around when my son was about 9-10 months old, and our drug dealer had ran out of his supply and had heroin that day, and we decided to try that. And that was the first time I had ever done heroin, and that was the last time that I had smoked crack for a long time. I had completely switched my drug of choice, and from that day forward, I have been a heroin addict for 10 years.
And so when you used it the first time, did you shoot it?
No. It took me a while to be able to use it, IV use. I had this, you know, this idea in my head that it was trashy to use needles, that, you know, my husband at the time, he was using needles, but I just thought it was the grossest thing. I didn't want any part of it. Well, then you get immune to how much you're using, and I needed a better high. So that's when I started. The first time I ever shot up heroin, I was at Greenfield Park with my son, and then it was, I never stopped.
And your son got taken away from you?
Yes. He was placed in the care of my mother. My mother was very concerned. She found out that, you know, I was using heroin, and she got social services involved, which was the best decision. I'm grateful for it today. I was angry at the time. But I'm so grateful that that happened. But once I didn't have a child to take care of, my addiction was full force. And my husband quit his job. We started breaking into sheds during the day and pawning tools. And that quickly caught up to us. And we racked up a whole bunch of felonies. And we were both sent to prison for a couple years.
Larceny and breaking and entering.
Yes.
You went to prison for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. When I looked at the public record, did you actually escape from prison at one point?
Yeah, well, I was incarcerated at the New Hanover County Jail, and I was actually just on probation, and they were going to send me to a rehab program in Black Mountain for 90 days, and I was coming off of heroin. This was the first time I was actually feeling withdrawals, and your addiction makes you think crazy, crazy thoughts.
You're pretty sick at this point if
yes.
you're going through heroin withdrawal.
Yes, exactly. And I needed that fix, and I was willing to do anything to get it. I faked seizures to get them to take me to the hospital, and It doesn't make any sense now, and it didn't make any sense then. I don't know what I was thinking, but I tried to escape through the ceiling at the hospital.
We're going to have to hear more about that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. Krista Turner is sharing her years-long battle with drug addiction and now recovery. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll learn about her commitment to helping others get off drugs as well. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, Krista Turner is taking us on what is, in parts, a harrowing journey through her struggles with substance abuse while being a mother, and why coming to terms with all of this, including her own childhood, is part of her recovery. It was last year she learned she was pregnant with her second child and sick with endocarditis, a heart infection, when doctors told her that her life was seriously at risk. That's when she went into Tides, Inc., a new Hanover County-funded local rehabilitation program that uses medically assisted therapy specifically designed by local OBGYN Dr. William Johnstone for women who are pregnant, might become pregnant, or who are new mothers. This conversation is pre-recorded. And Krista, just before we went to break, you were telling us about being sent to prison for larceny, breaking and entering, and all of this was done to fuel your heroin habit at this point. Right. You found a way to get them to admit you to the hospital. You were in prison going through serious heroin withdrawal, and all you can think about is getting your next fix. That's the most important thing, right. Which I think is pretty logical. So you're in the hospital, and you decide you're going to escape.
Right. So I set my plan into motion. It wasn't a very well thought out plan, but I was in jail getting ready to be transported to prison, and I decided to. They let me. All the situation just. They let me go into the bathroom and lock the door. So I was able to get my handcuffs off, but I still had shackles on. So that shows you just how much this disease, I mean, alters your mindset. Because where was I going to go with shackles on my feet, for one, you know? And I climbed up into the ceiling, and where I was going to go, I don't know. but I didn't make it very far because I hit a dead end. And so I got pulled out of the ceiling, and it was...
So is this like in a part of the HVAC system, or what? Where are you climbing? What kind of duct is it?
Well, I'm in the emergency room, sent before they redid it, and where there's lots of patients underneath the ceiling. I just went into the bathroom, and I'm in the ceiling tiles. Like, I'd slid a ceiling tile over, and I'm just up there in the ceiling, whatever that's called.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a mess. There was tiles falling on patients, and it was definitely...
As you're crawling through the ceiling,
right.
Ceiling tile dust is falling on people.
And... Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And not my proudest moment, for sure.
So you hit a dead end.
Yes.
And what did they discover, that you were in the ceiling, or did you...
Well, they quickly found out that I was in the ceiling because they realized the door was locked, so they had tried to figure out how to get into the bathroom, and I could hear them down there while I'm trying to figure out where I'm going. But they got me out rather quickly, and they were mad, to say the least, and it was a grueling time at the jail before I got transported, because they were not happy with me.
Why? What did they do?
Well, for one, they were mad because I kind of made them look like a fool for letting me lock the door. So they pulled me out of the ceiling, and one of the officers stuck his knee into my back and hit me with a taser. And then when they took me to the jail, it's called a pink cell. It's like a padded cell that has a hole in the floor to use the bathroom. And I was in that cell for 3 days. And then they put me on suicide watch for 12 days and lockdown for 45 days after that. And on the 46th day, when I was supposed to get off lockdown, that's when they transported me to prison. So they gave me every punishment they could possibly give me, plus an escape jail by failing charge.
So when you're on suicide watch, they weren't actually afraid that you were going going to do something to yourself.
No.
That was a punishment. And what does that mean? You're by yourself? Are you getting
three meals
a day? You
get 3 meals a day. You're in a solitary cell, but you don't have any clothes. It's called a turtle suit. It's just thick, horrible Velcro material, and it's humiliating. You don't have any underwear, it's cold. It's horrible. Horrible.
So you were basically by yourself, uncomfortable, cold, bored.
Right. Still going through withdrawals.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So eventually, how did you get out of prison? In a legit way.
Well, I was sentenced to 20 months, so I completed those 20 months, and I actually moved in with my dad when I got out. He was doing good at the time. He was a part of a 12-step program. He was in a relationship that was a healthy relationship at that time. And I couldn't move in with my mom because she's raising my son, and she didn't know which direction my life was going to go in. She couldn't, you know, afford to have that around my son. So.
And she had cut you off at
yes.
some point.
Yes. That was a little bit later down the road. After I moved in with my dad, after I got out of prison, I stayed clean for maybe a month or so, and I started with pills. And that quickly escalated back to heroin. And it seems like each time that you go back to using drugs, it escalates and it gets worse and it gets worse. It never gets better. And that definitely stood true for me. This time was definitely the worst. I was single, and I was using a lot of heroin, and I wasn't willing to do the breaking and enterings anymore, so I had to figure out a way to make money on my own. And that's when I turned to prostitution. And I was an escort, in so many words, on Craigslist for a while, and then I was, it was bringing in a good amount of money, and so I was spending all my money on drugs, and
so you're posting yourself on Craigslist.
Exactly.
Not that you're doing this of your own volition at this point, because when your mind is messed up, it's still, your thinking is off, but you don't have a pimp at this point.
No.
Okay.
No. No. And but that quickly moved to, I moved to Market Street, and I was staying from different hotels. I was just going down the line every night. Sometimes I would stay at one hotel for a month or two, and when I felt like it was, they might be catching on to what I was doing, I would move to the next one. And this quickly moved to walking down Market Street and getting picked up by drivers, just driving down Market Street for that exact reason, to pick up girls, because that's kind of, I don't know now because I haven't visited Market Street in a long time, but that's what it was known for, kind of, you know. So that was my life.
Was there ever a point where you worried that you might not make it out of a situation? Did you ever get picked up by someone who hurt you?
That happened.
More than just the thing itself, but.
Right. Maybe. That happened on quite a few occasions. Where people didn't, you know, want to pay, they wanted to take it. Mm-hmm. And that happened quite a few times, but that still wasn't enough for me to get clean.
Because when you were picking up these guys, you're also probably high.
Definitely right? High.
Because you stayed high
right.
throughout the day.
Yeah, and I had to be high to do that,
yeah.
You know.
Do you remember much about that?
I remember most of it, but I mean, it's kind of like hazy because, I mean, those years were just going through the motions. You know, I wasn't living any type of real life. I mean, it was the same thing every single day, like trying to figure out how I'm going to get money, how I'm going to get high, sometimes I didn't have the money to stay in a hotel. You know, I would, I'd be staying at the, on the bus stop or behind Target or.
You mean sleeping near the bus shelter or on the bench in the bus shelter?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Was there ever a point you thought you didn't want to go on anymore? Or did that not, was the power of getting high such a draw that didn't really come into play?
Right. I only wanted to get high. I existed to use drugs. That was all I wanted to do.
So at some point, you find out that you're pregnant with your second child. You're in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You've dealt with endocarditis, this heart infection, for I guess several bouts of it.
Right.
You learn that your life might be at risk, and you decide this is it. You're going to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you meet Dr. William Johnstone, who is the guy who started TIDES, the medically assisted recovery program?
Right. Well, when they told me that I was pregnant, I was having a girl, I had endocarditis again. Like I said, I was at a crossroads, and I had to figure out what I was going to do. And I knew that my drug addiction was so strong that the need to get high and the unwillingness to want to go through withdrawals, I knew that I needed help, and I asked for it. And I've never done that before. They have, before when I was in the hospital, you know, getting treatment for endocarditis, they'd come in and ask me if I wanted to go through substance abuse counseling, and the answer was always no. Mm-hmm. I didn't try to fake the funk. I was no. And so this time I asked for it. I needed help, and I did not want to go through withdrawals. And then I was so far along already that it could have been a health risk to the baby. So they told me that they had to find a doctor that was willing to prescribe the medication that I needed. And I went a couple of days with without any word, and then the doctors come in and tell me that they found a doctor that would be willing to help me out and that he was going to come and talk with me. And that's when Dr. Johnstone came in. And he came in and he lit up the room with his energy and his passion about wanting to help women in addiction and mothers, and because of his profession anyways. And he doesn't have any prior experience with addiction, and I feel so strongly about Dr. Johnstone because he saved my life.
I have to
life.
Say, every time I mention his name, you just light up like a Christmas tree.
I absolutely adore him. He is an amazing, he has an amazing soul. And he came in and he introduced, you know, the program and what it was about. He told me it was in its infancy, and I would kind of be like their guinea pig. And I was willing to do it. It sounded amazing. It sounded perfect. And so we started. I still had to stay in the hospital for 6 weeks. While I was there, it was a different program that is at the hospital, but I went to every meeting that they had, any substance abuse counseling that they offered. I was willing to do whatever it took to stay clean and stay in the hospital and stay on track. So I had to do 90 days in prison after I left the hospital because I was still in probation and I had violated. But once I got out, I was still in the CHIDES program, and we picked up from where we left off with the medically assisted treatment and weekly meetings with Dr. Johnstone. And it's just completely changed my life and my outlook on humanity.
And now you're studying to be a substance abuse counselor yourself.
Correct. First, I'm going to be certified as a peer support specialist, and then I'm going to be taking the Kate Fear program, the 2-year program for substance abuse counseling.
What kind of people do you want to help?
I want to help I want to help addicts. I want to help survivors of sexual abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse. I want to help break the stigma around addiction and sexual abuse, because those are topics that people don't want to talk about, and we kind of have to. At this point, especially with the opioid epidemic, it has to be talked about at this point. People, 192 people a day are overdosing off of heroin and opiates. It's ridiculous. And people need to see that. People need to open their eyes. We have to do something. Our country is dying around us.
And we only have a minute or so left, but the stigma that exists, what would you say to people who don't seem to understand that this is a disease, it's an affliction, it's not really a choice?
I have been conflicted with the disease choice controversy. I believe that it is a pre-existing condition in your mind. I believe it is a disease, and then it becomes a choice. So you have to be ready, but we have to get people to that point to where they are ready. We have to be open so they can take that next step.
That's this edition of Coastline. Krista Turner, what a bright light you are. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Coastline's producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our web and social media master. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.